All right, welcome back. Here to wrap up the weekend edition of the KE Report. We're going to pretty much shift our focus exclusively to the precious metals sectors. We are now chatting with Christopher Aaron, founder of iGold Advisor and the senior editor over at the Gold Eagle website. Now, Christopher, look, last time we had you on back in December, you were focused on the Dow to gold ratio and really saying that if we want gold to have a prolonged run, if we want to see this true bull market for the precious metals, we're going to need to see gold start to perform better against the underlying U.S. equity markets. And you were looking and comparing the gold chart to the Dow chart. Now, since we chatted in December, boy, oh boy, January was a good month. February, all of a sudden, stuff started rolling over. Goes hand in hand with U.S. markets and the gold price. Broadly, Christopher, any changes that you have seen or anything noteworthy we should be watching then between the Dow to gold ratio now compared to December?
Yes, absolutely, Corey, and thank you for having me back on the show. So as you said, when we last spoke in December, we were talking about, as the backdrop for investors here, the fact that from the 2015 low in gold, which was the major bear market low of just above $1,000 per ounce, as gold prices have nearly doubled, and in fact, at one point were more than a double as gold was above 2,000 just about a year ago. So gold prices nearly doubling over the last 6 years, yet the Dow to gold ratio being exactly flat, fully flat, no change in the Dow to gold ratio, meaning that the average stock index fund, whether a Dow fund, an S&P 500 fund, or any major index around the world, investors have done just as well in a stock index fund compared to gold over the last 6 years, even though the gold price has doubled. And so what that means is that the speculative bid, you know, the average investor that, let's say 10 or 12 years ago in the last cycle, started to turn their attention toward gold and alternative assets, has been absent from this bull run here. So when we last spoke in December, you know, we were looking at the Dow to gold ratio in the range of 17.5 ounces of gold to buy one share in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. And in fact, we did see that recovery in gold. You know, gold was actually up about $250 since the last time we spoke, but the Dow to gold ratio actually moved in favor of the Dow during that time, just ever so slightly, moving from about 17.5 to about 18 in favor of the Dow. So what that means is, still, once again, and at the risk of sounding like a broken record, but I have to say what I see in front of me until that is no longer the case, is that, you know, even with this recovery in gold, we have seen the Dow and gold basically moving in lockstep, not necessarily every single day, but as a net sum here over these last 6 years, and it continues to be the case.
Yeah, Christopher, that is the truth about it, because we are seeing rallies in gold that are also accompanied by rallies in general equities. And it seems like every time we get liftoff in the metals, it's happening in tandem with other markets lifting off. And so really that ratio hasn't changed that much. We will definitely keep an eye on it for the big picture divergence that we need to see in the sector. But I'd love to get your thoughts on just the gold chart in isolation, because what we did see really in the fourth quarter of last year was the metals bottom, you know, in September, silver bottomed, then the miners bottomed in late September for GDX, GDXJ, and then gold took a little bit longer to get the memo, but it did finally put in its bottom in early November at 1618, and it tacked on about $350 in just a few months, and by January, it was up at 1975 at one point, right before that Powell press conference, very close to the $2,000, you know, magical psychological number, and it since then has rolled over, but it looks like, for the most part, we've seen gold put in its worst move and recover quickly. What's your thoughts on the fact that it did break that 1680 support and recovered so quickly?
Yeah, so this is a huge technical signature, we would call it, when we're looking at the charts, when we're studying the price behavior of gold. And this, by the way, was the subject of my talk in Vancouver a couple of weeks ago, which should be posted here within the next week or so by Cambridge House. But to back up to the gold price action, as you were mentioning, Shad, the critical point to think about here is that, so basically, you know, gold has been in this consolidation since 2020. It's going on 3 years now. And so as a net sum, we have gold prices that are flat. Consolidations do not last forever. There's no sideways consolidation in the markets that is simply going to keep moving sideways, you know, in perpetuity. And so there are two options. Either the consolidation is going to break upward, that will result in new all-time highs for gold, or it's going to break downward, in which this entire thing turns into a big top. Now, the interesting thing is that, as you said, Chad, we did have an attempt to break down in the fourth quarter of last year. Gold actually violated the support zone, which was right at $1,680 per ounce. And that level had been tested on four separate occasions going back to 2020. So you had a clear horizontal support there, which failed for a couple weeks back in September and October of 2022, just last year before the holidays. It failed. But as opposed to seeing what we witnessed in 2013, when that top after the 2011 peak manifested, in 2013, when gold failed through its horizontal consolidation of the previous 2 years, gold plummeted by $240 in 48 hours after the breakdown point. I'm not exaggerating about that. I've gone back and studied it with a fine-tooth comb. $240 plummet. It led to the total of the five-year bear market. A lot of these miners were down 90 to 95% throughout that period of time. In contrast, what we saw here just in the fourth quarter of last year was a temporary breakdown lasting for a few weeks. But instead of plummeting, someone stepped in. Most likely it's going to be a sovereign wealth fund or a central bank, and we'll see the numbers reported on that at some point in the future. Ultimately, I don't really care so much who it is. It's more what they did. And they used that temporary breakdown as an opportunity to scoop up gold, which results in that temporary breakdown being called a false breakdown in our technical model. Very different from a legitimate breakdown. So this puts, you know, just for context again, we've got a three-year consolidation now in gold that has just witnessed a false breakdown. That flips the expectation of this market to the opposite of the false move. It's said that from false moves come fast moves, and the implication is in the opposite direction as the false move. So we did see almost a $300 recovery in gold back to the recent peak just a couple weeks ago. Gold is backing off now. I was expecting that, you know, really, if you look at this from a functional standpoint, all right, 1975 pushing up against the 2000 handle, that represents the third major attempt to break above that 2000 handle going back for the last 3 years. Markets tend to not successfully break out on their third attempt, which is what we just witnessed. And so what I'm looking for here is basically a kind of mini cup-shaped consolidation to last through the midpoint of this year, maybe into the summer doldrums, May, June. And then that this should be rounding out and upward in favor of gold for what should be the fourth and functionally speaking successful attempt for the gold market to break upward in what is going to basically be a 3.5 year consolidation. And again, just to remind listeners, the key reason why I expect the gold chart to break upward this time is that we had a false breakdown lower, and that flips the expectations higher, as all those people who piled on the short side of things, hedgers, speculators, manipulators, all those shorts are going to be really feeling the pressure to cover their positions here. That's why that ends up happening.
So Christopher, let's carry this over to the gold stocks then, because as encouraging as it is to see gold continuing to move closer to those all-time highs, unfortunately, the gold stocks, you look at GDX, GDXJ, they are well off of their all-time highs. You can even make the argument that they've been trending lower since that 2020 peak, even after this 50% bounce. Why? For all the gold investors, and look, a lot of people go to the stocks to try to make money in the gold market. Why have the gold stocks underperformed so much in your eyes?
Yeah, it's been quite disappointing to be right on the macro thesis of gold moving higher, yet to have the expression of that through traditional vehicles, which investors are looking for leverage, to have that not play out. You know, when we look at big picture for the GDX index, just talking about the senior gold miners versus gold, I mean, we've had gold already exceed its 2011 peak of $1,920 per ounce. Yet the GDX at the similar periods of time only made a 50% Fibonacci retracement of the bear market, only getting back into the region around 40, 45 on the GDX. Whereas at 2011, the GDX had peaked at 66. So GDX got nowhere near its 2011 peak, even as gold made new all-time highs within the last 2 years. Here, over the short run, when we look at just, let's say, the last few months out of the false breakdown, we did start to notice a little bit of leverage to the upside. GDX rose almost 50% in the move, whereas gold was up by about $300, or that would be in the range of 20 to 25%. So, you know, that is outperformance on the short term, but certainly over the intermediate term, basically going back to 2016 at the very least, the gold miners have underperformed. In my opinion, it comes back to that Dow to gold ratio that we were discussing earlier, where you have the mainstream investor that is nowhere near this market. And this is not just me looking at data points on charts. I'm also talking anecdotally speaking with respect to my business, you know, and I've been doing this since 2007. In 2009, 2010, 2011, that whole period after the global financial crisis, I started to have individuals who had never before invested in gold or thought about it, friends of mine who would be, you know, quite mainstream investors, let's say, who started to approach me out of the blue and say, hey, Chris, you know, I heard you follow the gold market. Is this a good time for me to be buying some gold? You know, as gold was making that move from 1,000 to 1920. That was back in the last cycle. I've had none of that during this cycle. So back to the point that I think we're arriving at here is that the mainstream investor, both in the United States and Canada and in most of the West, the mainstream investor has not yet even begun to think about investing in precious metals. I would argue from a long-term perspective, that is a bullish contrarian signal. We are not near a long-term ultimate top here with that set of circumstances happening. But that said, I believe that's why we have not seen any of that speculative bid come into the market, and why the GDX is underperforming, and not just the GDX, but a lot of the development and junior miners are orders of magnitude undervalued compared to where they were either 5 years ago in 2016 and certainly compared to 2011. And you look at across the board, there are companies that have defined resources. I'm not even talking exploration only. There's nothing wrong with exploration, but let's put that as a certain level of risk that I'm not referring to in this moment. But even if we talk about companies with proven and probable resources, I'm seeing companies that are trading for $20 to $25 per ounce of gold in the ground in that proven and probable reserve category. Back in 2010, 2011, when gold prices were the same as they are today, those same reserves were selling for between $300 to $300, $350 per ounce in the ground. You're talking 10 to 15x or more than 1,000% higher valuations than we are seeing today. Literally orders of magnitude, life-changing orders of magnitude higher than the basement rock bottom levels, no pun intended, that we are seeing today. So when we, you know, it has been disappointing, it has been frustrating. Trust me, I feel it the same as all the listeners out there. But when we come back to the gold chart for a minute and we take the knowledge that that thing made a false breakdown in Q4 of last year, it's still in the consolidation. I did not expect it would break out now, just a few weeks ago. Looks like we'll have a nice midsummer consolidation here. But when you juxtapose the idea that that false breakdown preludes what should be a positive breakout to new all-time highs, either late 2023 or early 2024, if there ever was a moment for these miners to start really receiving some mainstream attention and for some of that mainstream investor money to start entering, and for these companies to, let's say, I mean, maybe they don't get back to their 2011 valuations, but even if some of those companies that are sitting on proven and probable that are trading for 20 in the ground right now, even if some of those go back to $50 or $100 per ounce, that's going to be a significant leverage to the price of gold when you think, hey, maybe gold tacks on a few hundred extra bucks from this point. So if there ever was an opportunity for what we could call a life-altering revaluation in this sector, it looks to me like it's over the next 24 months. And all I can say is investors want to be positioning and making their basket of miners that they're going to invest in. They want to be doing that now and throughout the midsummer lull that should be setting up here. Because once this thing breaks out and these things start catching a bid, that's when you start to see quite rapid moves. And you don't want to be chasing at that point. So no one has a crystal ball. But if there ever was an opportunity for this thesis to develop, it appears to be here and over the next 24 months.
Yeah, Christopher, it's really stunning the disconnect between where the mining stocks are, where the metals prices are, when you look at it in context of where things were. I mean, I remember that run and from the great financial crisis up to the peak in 2011 and where the mining stocks were valued. And it's not just even the development stage plays. It's all the companies. It's the juniors. It's the producers. I mean, the only thing that's really kind of moved up over that same time period are like big royalty companies like Franco-Nevada. They've continued to build value. But when you look at the producers, a lot of them have acquired other companies and they've added more mines on. They've got way bigger reserves than they've ever had. Now with the price of gold where it is, even eclipsing where it was in 2011, you would think these things would be much higher. And what we hear is the reason, Christopher, is like, yeah, but look at inflation, look at input costs. But I mean, input costs haven't gone up enough to where there's a 10x differential between where the ounces in the ground are being valued then versus now. I mean, that's not an argument that holds any water. People have talked about dilution, but they ignore the fact that, yes, it was dilution on the fact of these companies have added projects. They have taken over a development stage company. The developers weren't developers last cycle. Some of these companies, we were laughing before this call, that they were explorers in 2011 or maybe in 2016 that had way bigger market caps than they do now when they have 2, 3, 4 million ounces of gold in the ground. So what would you tell investors? Because you also write for Gold Eagle. You've been in the sector for a couple decades. What would you say to people that are fatigued from this and just think, hey, Christopher, maybe these mining stocks are just never going to have the leverage again to gold and they're ready to throw in the towel? What would you say to investors that are kind of in that negative sentiment spiral?
Yeah, Shad, that's such a great point. Let that sink in for one moment if you're listening to this interview. That last point that Chad made, that in 2011, you had companies that were exploration only that had higher market caps than they do now, fast forward 11 years into the future, when they're sitting on proven and probable reserves in the ground. So such a disconnect here. What I want to do is just give listeners a little backdrop as to how this played out in the 1970s, the last great bull market run where a lot of wealth was made in the precious metals sector in the move from 1971 up until the peak in 1980 at $850 per ounce gold and $50 silver. This move occurred in two waves. There was the initial move that started after the severing of the Bretton Woods Agreement, where Nixon took the US dollar off the gold standard, which happened in August of 1971. There was the initial move when gold rose from $35 up to $200 per ounce in 1974. And the gold mining stocks actually vastly outperformed gold during that period by an order of magnitude of about 3-1 throughout the entire period. And in fact, the gold miners led the price of gold. The gold miners started to break out in the late 1960s. Basically in anticipation of the severing of the U.S. dollar and gold. They were kind of smelling it out ahead of time. And so the gold miners led until 1974. From 1974 to 1976, gold had a mid-cycle pause. It peaked out at about $200 per ounce. It corrected back to 100, so it was like a 50% correction. A lot of the gold miners fell during this time as well. But starting in 1976, when gold bottomed from that correction at $100 per ounce, and then into 77 through January of 1980, moved from 100 up to the ultimate peak in 1980 at $850 per ounce. So call it an 8x move in the final 3 years of that bull run for physical gold. The gold mining complex actually lagged gold in the entire second part of that move. That move from 100 to 850, the gold mining complex lagged, actually in quite a similar way as to how it's been lagging here for the last few years, compared to what we saw in the 2001 to 2011 cycle. So one could draw an analogy that perhaps the gold miners are at this point lagging because they are expecting that after this run in gold, whether the ultimate peak is at $2,500, whether it's $3,000, whether it's some, you know, astronomical figure like $10,000 per ounce, whatever the final number is, one could argue that the gold miners are lagging now in anticipation of that being some sort of final peak that is coming, you know, a year or 2 or 3 years into the future for gold. Now, as one sort of saving grace type of point, I should mention that in the very final part of that move, basically we're talking the last year, 1979 through the peak in 1980, is when the gold miners, you had a whole huge new influx of money come into the gold sector. Basically, everyone who had missed the move starting from 1971, all the mainstream investors started to pile in the year 1979. And so it was in the last 10% of the time of that move, a lot of these companies moved up 5x, 10x, 20x in that last 12 months of the move. And I think something like that is possible. If this sector is going to form a long-term top, let's say at some point in the middle part of this decade, what should be setting up still is one more quite significant move in the miners. It's just that it might frustrate people for 90% of the time. And then in the last 10%, like what happened in the 1970s, is when all the catch-up move occurs. So I would simply say this is playing out in quite a similar kind of way. History doesn't repeat. History often rhymes. If there was an opportunity for this to set up and offer some real life-altering returns, it appears to be still ahead of us, and no one can predict. You know, this may be like the thief in the night. No one can predict that moment when the psychology is going to change, but that is what we are looking for, and to compare that to what happened also in history.
All right, Christopher, we're out of time for this segment, but as always, great having you on the show. Thank you for sharing some of your insights, and thanks for stepping a little bit away from just the individual charts, comparing what we've seen gold do compared to U.S. markets, and also gold compared to the underlying precious metal stocks. I know a lot of our listeners are really hoping that this whole scenario of a much more bullish, maybe end to the year, maybe even couple years coming up, well, that could draw everything higher, which would be a welcoming aspect for this sector and for a lot of people listening. Christopher, thank you as always for your time. Everybody, thanks for tuning in on this weekend show. Please make sure to join us throughout the week on our website and podcast. We'll be covering the market moves all through next week as well. Christopher, everybody, hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
Thank you so much for having me, gentlemen.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.